Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, your host, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. I'm honored to have once again on our program Ronald O. Barney, noted historian and Executive Director of the Mormon History Association. Ron serves with the Joseph Smith Papers Project and is an editor on that important project, has been a historian with the Church History Department in Salt Lake City for over 30 years. And Ron is one of our great experts on many aspects of church history, but particularly as we now talk about the 1847 trek of the Vanguard Company. So, Ron, welcome again to Past Impressions.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
In our last program, Ron, we talked about the preparations and all the things that led up to that 1847 exodus from winter quarters and the settlements there on the Missouri River. We talked about them gathering at the Elkhorn and all of the people that are involved in that 144-plus company. Now, as they cross out and cross on the Elkhorn and start, what are some of the great challenges that they face? Even though there's only 12 dozen of them, it's not an easy task. What are they facing as they head out on the plains?
Well, I think to tell this story, it will be kind of important to create just a little bit of context for this. The Mormons certainly were not the first group of people to go to the West. There had been forays into the West in the middle 1830s. There are actually connections with the Mormons going in 1847 that end up being tied into the Mountain Men and the fur trade in the previous decades. Roads had been built to the West. And the most important road was the Platte River Road. Many people today call it the Oregon Trail. Many of those who initiated the movement from the east to the west with great prospects of new opportunities and new land. We're headed to the Willamette Valley in Oregon, but then also California became a popular destination, and so it moved from just the Oregon Trail to the California Trail, and by the time the Mormons came along in the mid 1840s, after thousands had already gone, This Platte River Road had been well traveled. I think there have been some who've made the argument that the Mormons didn't do one bit of exploring in this. All they did was benefit from others' travel. My close study of this suggests something a bit different than that. I think there was some exploration. They did make some decisions that was different than their predecessors, one of which was we're going to travel on the other side of the road. We're not going to travel on the south side. We're going to travel on the north side of the Platte River, this remarkable ribbon of water that became a linkage between the Midwest and the West. The Platte River, some describe it's a mile wide and an inch deep, and others said it was too thin to plow and too thick to drink. there were all kinds of attributes applied to the Platte River, but it really served its purpose as being a means and a mechanism to take large groups of people from the Midwest, where water was abundant, past the 100th parallel, or excuse me, the 100th meridian that John Wesley Powell made famous, moved into arid lands. And so the water, the conduit of water became very, very important. Even that, the reason that the Mormons started out when they did in 1847 was to try to beat the others who were on their way to the West. And one of the things that they one of the reasons they went on the north side of the Platte River was to get greater access to feed. Mm-hmm. One can imagine that when you have tens of thousands of head of cattle over a given year, you can pretty much denude the land of vegetation and make travel very, very critical. Because I think you can make the case, I think I made that case in the book I did, that the animals were just about as important as the people.
Absolutely, yeah.
They were absolutely essential, and great care was taken to them. And just parenthetically, I remember a time when one of the brethren was kind of mean to his horse, and Brigham Young jumped right down his throat. Yeah. We don't do that. Not only is there some Christian obligation about treating all of the creations of God respectfully, but these animals were very, very important to the venture that was in front of them. They knew something about the West. John Charles Fremont began his work as a government explorer and went into the West as early as 1842-43 and had published a report of that venture, including the maps that had been drawn that became available to the Saints. They also had a map that was created by a famous map maker named Mitchell that was crafted in 1846, so they had some guide in front of them that let them know in advance a little bit about what they were getting into.
They're on their way, and how far do we get each day? What challenges are they facing day by day? What kind of progress are they making? Are they going to be able to meet their preconceived schedule as they go through there?
Well, at the outset, they had some idea about where they were going. Mm-hmm. Others had done reconnaissance of the area, and they were benefited from maps and written descriptions of the venture into the West. And so they became aware of some of the threats that had cautioned other people. And two of those threats were Indians and the Donner Reed Party, who went west the year before and had the horrific experience mm-hmm. in the Sierra Nevadas when an early winter brought them into a terrible circumstance of death. And the Mormons had heard word of mm-hmm. this. So they wanted to get out to the West in a timely way. As they departed the Elkhorn, they immediately found evidence of Native Americans. Initially, it was the Pawnee Indians. Very soon, they came across a missionary station that had been built in the previous decade, a venture of Christian missionaries who had come to try to Christianize the Indians. It was a remarkable ruin for being just 10 years old. And interestingly, one of their party, a man named Samuel Case, had actually worked at that missionary station before the Saints had left. And so he had some idea about these things. Nothing bad happened, but they saw evidence of the Pawnees, and they were afraid. Now, the Indians were bold enough to try to steal animals from the Mormons, and so the Mormons were very careful of that. And they all of the Anglos who headed west knew about that kind of a threat, but physical violence was something they were always wary of. Fortunately, they did not encounter that. And as of course, as they moved westward, they moved from the realm of the Pawnee to the domain of the Sioux Indians, and then eventually the Shoshone. So mm-hmm. And there were several other Native American tribes whom they encountered going across, but those were the main ones. But in no instances for this vanguard were Latter-day Saints attacked by Indians, and so it became a relatively safe journey for them, although they saw evidence around them all the time that gave them pause as they intruded upon Native American tribal lands, and in many ways they were never welcomed, and traveling in larger numbers, of course, became beneficial to them so that they were able to carry on. After 2 weeks on the road in western Nebraska, they encountered and sometimes they would go just a handful of miles a day. Other times they'd get up to 20 miles a day, depend upon the terrain. And then there were other exigencies that complicated travel some, but they were eventually able to really get some momentum behind them, a predictable daily routine that allowed them to move west. Within 2 weeks, and they had been looking forward to this, and this was not a caution, within 2 weeks they encountered the great American bison for the first time, May 1st. And one of the men, I believe it was Erastus Snow, described it having a romantic feel about it. They were very excited about this. Almost none of them, coming from the eastern hard woodlands, knew anything about these behemoths of the plains. And so they were really excited about it, and everybody wanted to grab their Kentucky rifle and go out and shoot. And it didn't take very long to realize that there had to be some constraint on this group of people. And that's one of the when this the couple of dozen that were finally selected, when that kind of coalesced into a predictable group so that everybody wasn't just off a shooting.
Wow. Today on Past Impressions, our guest is Ron Barney. We're talking about the Vanguard Pioneer Company. And Ron, you talked about that romantic day they described of seeing the buffalo for the first time out on the plains and how it was a romantic day. How do they deal with not only that day, but other things that are so unique to them that none of them had ever encountered before in their life? And let's just keep talking about what transpires on those plains of Nebraska.
Well, the fascination that they had with the buffalo was beneficial not just from the sight and the remarkable exhibit of the animal world that was in front of them, but this became very important for their welfare. Mm-hmm. They used the buffalo and were cautioned that they did not kill without purpose, mm-hmm. that they were to use the buffalo for food. And when some got carried away, they were cautioned about this. For a couple of weeks, they were right in the middle of buffalo country every day. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they had to worry about was their own animals, their cattle, intermixing with the buffalo. And as they would do so, and it did happen, the cattle would just go off with the buffalo, mm-hmm. and they were gone. And so they became very cautious about this. They had men on the perimeter who rode those perimeters that helped keep the animals together. Which brings us to a really an interesting event that that happened, and I think it is very telling. As I recall, it was on the 9th of May that a young man who had a lot of experience in Mormonism up to the time, but he was still a young man in his 20s, and it was his assignment that day to go out and ride the perimeter, keep the animals in. Well, he neglected his duty. And so some animals got away, and Brigham Young and others had to ride after the animals to get them back in. And in the process, Brigham Young lost his spyglass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this spyglass was a very valued implement that was used by Brigham Young, the head of the entire expedition, and it really rubbed him raw that he had lost it because of someone's dereliction of duty. So when they came back in the absence of this spyglass, he focused his considerable energy on excoriating this young man.
And it's a nice way of saying.
And he did it publicly.
Hmm.
And the young man, who should have known better, stepped up and said, "I'll take whatever you can give me."
Mm.
And there was a confrontation, and it pressed Brigham Young's button even more. And he really went after him and said things to him personally that really gave the young man pause. Well, the next day, the young man, who happened to be a young whippersnapper named Erastus Snow.
How about that?
Recognized that he had made a big mistake. He apologized and ate humble pie and said, as he wrote later on, he said, "I hope to never have that kind of experience again the rest of my life." Now, I think it says something about Erastus Snow. And it says something about Brigham Young that within 2 years, Erastus Snow was called to be a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles.
That is a great example, yeah.
Brigham Young forgave him. Erastus Snow learned his lesson and ended up being one of the most important Latter-day Saints in the settlement of the Intermountain West. And I just think that little pause there in Buffalo Country is important to recognize and to remind us that there are personalities involved in this all along. And this is a motley group of people who have been brought together. Most of them were Northerners, but there were some Southerners. Eventually, a whole contingent from the South joined the group, and it was not uniform. It was not homogeneic. But altogether, the venture became a worthwhile one because there was order, there was authority, and allowed them to accomplish something that I think was absolutely singular. Well, Brigham Young, about the third week of May, in one instance, one of the people who were chronicling the venture noted how much he complimented the saints. "You've been wonderful. You are subscribing to authority. You're doing your prayers. You are taking care of your duties. It is a pleasure to be with you. I'm so proud of you." And then a week later,
mm-hmm.
they get to Scott's Bluff, Nebraska, on the western side of Nebraska, this a remarkable landmark that was some people refer to it as castle-like.
Mm-hmm.
There in near Scott's Bluff, and it was so remarkable that there were a number of pencil sketches taken by the Latter-day Saints of Scott's Bluff and then later on Chimney Rock, which is not that far away. But there on the evening of the 28th of May, Brigham Young met with several of his closer associates and said, something is wrong in Israel, and he was going to do something about it. Well, word spread so that on the 29th of May, something happened that was a significant venture for the Pioneer Brigade. As it turned out, word about Brigham Young's displeasure infiltrated the camp. And so there was some nervousness on the part of this group of pioneers that that the leader, a man who was a no-nonsense man, and his reputation was well earned. In so many ways, for the first part, and we're only into the trek now for a little over a month, about a month and 10 days. That month and 10 days had gone rather well. But as time went on, as the summer went on, as the heat increased, as are we there yet kind of thing, mm-hmm. and they knew that they had a long way in front of them, many of the men began to entertain themselves, as it were. They'd do their duties during the day, but at night they kind of laid down those tools. They laid down what their duties were, and engaged in what was described as frivolities. I'm going to read from Norton Jacobs' diary for the 29th. Again, they had got wind from the Brigham's discussion with some of his chief lieutenants the night before that he was not happy, and so there was some interest. This is Saturday, the 29th, another misty morning. This morning the camp has been very quiet. They have taken the hint from hearing what the president said last night. After the teams were all harnessed onto our wagons about half past 11 o'clock, the men were all called into the center of the circle when the president directed the captains of 10 to assemble their men separately and Brother Bullock to call the roll. When all were found to be present except Joseph Hancock and Andrew S. Gibbons, and Brothers Hancock and Gibbons were hunters, and so they were out doing their duties. The president, then standing in the boat, and they had a bull boat that was made out of buffalo hide that they called the Revenue Cutter, and it served many purposes, used to cross streams and rivers, but also as a platform, and in this circumstance, a pulpit. The president, then standing in the boat, mounted on a wagon, commenced addressing the congregation in the order in which they stood, and Norton Jacob puts quotes here, said he was now going to preach. Had not preached much on this road because really he had never needed to. And his text would be that he did not feel like going any farther with this company of men and with the spirit that prevails now in this camp. From this text he would preach to them. And they were told before they left winter quarters that some here know that because of our faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ and on account of the doctrine taught by Joseph Smith, the church has suffered all manner of persecution, and we have been driven out from among the Gentiles for our religion. He's saying we've gone to all this kind of trouble to try to flee from our difficulties, and now he says, I am in no hurry to go on, nor do I intend to go any farther while such a spirit reigns in this camp as has prevailed for several days, dancing, playing cards, checkers, dominoes, and giving way to a spirit of gambling. I want to know who is willing to pray without my asking them to do it and turn unto the Lord with full purpose to keep his commandments. He then called for a division of the company, and there was found to be 18 high priests, 80 70s, 8 elders, 13 members, 8 of the 12, and 6 that do not belong to the church. Mm-hmm. And he systematically
calls them out.
Went to these mm-hmm. people and said, your ways are going to be mended, or I'm not going another foot. He said, I'd rather go with 10 people and go by myself than travel under these kinds of circumstances. Well, I won't continue on in what was a lengthy
It's a great sermon. It's a great sermon and a call for them to remember who they are and why they're out there, that they're not just mountain men. They are men of God.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. The ranks were narrowed. Those who had been humbled decided to do things anew. And it really was a remarkable thing. And you know, today we might think, well, gee whiz, that's pretty darn trivial.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't these men need a little relief?
A little steam, yeah.
And I don't think Brigham Young overlooked that.
Mm-hmm.
But it had got to the point where it was very clear to him that the prize that was in front of them had began to dilute a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They were losing the vision of what they were going for. And if Brigham Young knew one thing, it was that if we lose the spirit in all of this, we're not going to end up where we're supposed to be, or where the favorable circumstances that will inevitably follow us will not be manifest because we've lost the spirit. And he was very concerned that was the case. And we must remember here that Brigham Young is only 46 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's 45 and almost 46. He doesn't turn 46 until the day they get to Fort Laramie on June the 1st. He's a young man, and the people who are with him are young men.
Mm-hmm.
And they're away from their families. And so this is a significant turning point for them. Here at the westernmost part of Nebraska, as they are beginning to move to the high plains that characterize Wyoming.
You know, and I find it really, really fascinating, too, that great Scott's Bluff discourse and that turning point in that pioneer company where he calls them to repentance is kind of like a bookend to Section 136 at the other end of the trail where they started out. And so while they weren't necessarily being terribly evil like many of the other companies, probably what was being done in the Mormon Pioneer Company was nothing compared to the Oregon Trail pioneers or the others. But Brigham is bringing them back to that revelation and reminding them who they are and the mission that they're on. And so I like to think of it as almost like bookends. Now we're going to continue on. And so we want to have Ron Barney back at our next episode as we continue on the Vanguard Pioneer Brigade as they leave that Scott's Bluff area and then go in, as you mentioned, the high plains of Wyoming and then ultimately into the Salt Lake Valley. And so, Ron, thank you again for teaching us on this one, and we look forward to having you on our next episode of Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Brent.